The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay, welcome everybody. It's good to see all of you here. It's great to just look out and see all those shining faces. For those of you who aren't in 524 ordinarily, let me just tell you how nice it is to be in here and have it not be a sauna. This session serves a few purposes. One is to give you a quick, very general orientation to the business law program. Another is to introduce you to just a few faculty. And we also want to do our best to try to give you some advice, if you want it, on choosing courses for the next year. And we'll talk about all of those things and some of the amazing opportunities that there are here. Professor Bennett has a conflicting meeting, so needs to speak right away. And she will get us started on clinical opportunities. And then Professor Abramowitz will also talk about that, and we'll be able to field questions on sort of the clinical side of things with respect to business law opportunities in clinic. And I'll tell you the rest later so we can keep moving. So, Professor Bennett.
Okay, great. Thank you all. I'll just stay seated. I appreciate the invitation to come talk to you today, and I apologize that I have to leave so quickly. But just in advance, my extension is 4149, and my room number is 436, if anybody wants to like come ask me any questions at some point afterwards. Basically, my involvement in this is primarily that I'm the director of the Community Economic Development Law Clinic, which is one of 10 clinical programs at the Washington College of Law. Mr. Abramowitz is the director of the Low-Income Taxpayer Clinic. We should talk about that. But this is an opportunity. All our clinical opportunities are open to students in their second and third year, but primarily in their third year. And all of them share one characteristic, which is that you have the primary responsibility for clients. Those clients can be of many types, have many different types of problems and issues. The clients with which my clinic deals, which is why I'm here today, our clients who are involved in various aspects of business. They tend to be organizations, nonprofit corporations, for-profit corporations, limited liability companies, small businesses, sole proprietorships, and they're engaged in various aspects of providing services, goods to different parts, mostly underserved parts and under-resourced parts of the District of Columbia and the DC metro area in Maryland counties, Prince George's and Montgomery. I think I would characterize our practice on behalf of those organizational and micro-entrepreneurial clients as a fair amount of corporate governance work for the corporations and, I guess, for the corporations, advising them on their basic documents, articles of incorporation, bylaws, filings for tax exemption where appropriate, both federal and local and state. Continuing governance, conflict policies, the duties of the for-profit and non-profit boards. These are all things that once you take business associations or as you're taking business associations, you will hear frequently. And one of the primary services that our students provide directly to these community clients is to advise on these matters of structure that will enable them to sort of shore up and increase their capacity to provide the services, the goods, the whatever that they do. So among our clients are, we work at the farmer's market, an urban farmer. I'm thinking about food a lot these days. We've got small businesses that provide daycare to primarily immigrant kids. We've got other kinds of nonprofits that provide affordable housing. And so it's a very broad range of subject matter areas, but a fairly consistent range of types of clients who work in these areas. Again, students, it's a full-year clinic. 7 credit semester, and students provide a lot of representation, I think, during the course of the year, a lot of very, very useful service. Second opportunity that I know something about, although I'm not directly involved in it, for you to become directly connected with the work of clients in the business area is through externships. And Jay, is anybody else going to speak about that?
I'll talk about it a little bit.
Okay, so Professor Stein will speak about that a little bit, but we have many excellent externship opportunities that can begin in your second year. with the federal agencies that are intimately involved in the regulation of business. The ones I know best are the ones that deal with financial institutions, Consumer Financial Protection Board, the SEC, lesser degree the FTC, the Community Development Financial Institutions Fund, which provides lending to community-based institutions. But these are all valuable exposures, I think, that can enable you to work with a supervising attorney on site at the particular agency and become accustomed with the work of the agency and then tangentially with the work of the regulated businesses and institutions that that agency deals with day in and day out. So we have a lot of opportunities for, I guess, what we group under the heading of experiential learning in this school. I cannot conceive of you leaving this place without taking advantage of one or more of them. And again, at some point, and if you want to talk to me about any of them, I'm happy to do so.
Thanks very much. So, Professor Susan Bennett, you have your extension. And we can do tag team here, Jim, sure. Because Susan is still. Since we gotten started on clinical opportunities, I'm now going to go ahead and turn it over to Professor Nancy Abramowitz, who can tell you about the tax clinic. Very different sort of orientation, still gives great experience, but you know, on the one hand, we have essentially transactional side, and this is a combination of business. There's nothing more business than tax and litigation.
Right. Basically, again, for transactional experience, it is the Community and Economic Development Clinic. A little bit of IP. IP is in between controversy work and transactional work. Our tax clinic is all controversy work. I want to start by saying, if any of you hasn't thought about it, I actually passed an admitted students group the other day, and I was introduced as they were standing in front of the clinic by whomever the tour guide was, and somebody said, how can students practice if they're not lawyers? And I said, that's really a great question. You probably may not have taken the time to think about it, but the way you practice is through special orders. You are, in fact, admitted as student lawyers to whatever forum your particular clinic is litigating before. So, in fact, you are admitted for a fixed period of time. You're reported to the bar. They know all about you. They may have even seen your resume. So you are admitted and you are acting as lawyers pursuant to a contract that the clinic has with whatever forum. Our tax clinic handles matters not for businesses. We are limited because we are federally funded to representing individuals only. Federal personal income tax is a requirement. We are a clinic that sort of transcends interest areas. You might say, well, if you're representing low-income taxpayers with individual problems, what has that got to do with business? For those of you who are interested in tax or litigation, first of all, the tax process and procedures that we use are equally applicable to the T-shirt seller on K Street or IBM. It's the same procedural process with the Internal Revenue Service. It's the same litigation process. So learning and becoming familiar and dealing with the same people is a skill you would bring to any tax practice you have. Secondly, I think one of the biggest things you can learn, particularly in a statutory area, is how to read a statute, how to work with a statute, how to interpret it, to understand the administrative law that is involved in dealing with matters administratively before you get to court. And basically, the normal skills you pick up in clinic in terms of interviewing and counseling individuals figuring out how to behave as a professional. So that's my pitch on the tax clinic. We have a number of other clinics, including general practice, where people do a fair amount of work for individuals, sometimes small businesses there, and do a fair amount of bankruptcy work for anyone who might be interested in bankruptcy. You can read the list of other clinics. I do want to give a little pitch also. I also teach an upper-level course in pensions and employee benefits, which is the statute, guiding statute there is ERISA. It is an area that touches on tax, on trust, on financial institutions, on bankruptcy, on corporate law, and there are no prerequisites for it, but I urge everybody to think about getting a good, whatever your interest is, whether it's human rights or whatever, take some basic courses, and Professor Snyder will fill you in on what those are, but there is a core, which I think is core literacy for anyone graduating from law school. I'll stop there and take questions.
Okay, that sounds great. So I didn't do a full introduction at the beginning because I wanted to be able to get straight to Professor Bennett, but I'm David Snyder, and I'm the director of the business law program, and the business law program here is big, and it's pretty broad, and we do lots of different things. So there's the curricular piece, and I will talk a little bit later about the curricular piece of things. We sponsor events. So in the last month or two, we had the chairman of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, came and spoke here. It may have even been in this room. Which was a pretty big deal. She unveiled a new initiative on technological monitoring and enforcement of things like high-speed trading, and we had the press here. It was pretty interesting. And then a few days ago, we had David, so going from the regulatory side to the purely business side, we had David Rubenstein, who is the head of the Carlyle Group, which is one of the primary fund-based investment groups in Nuga with the world. He's been very successful. You know you've reached a certain level of success when you have enough money where the government doesn't have enough money to fix the Washington Monument, so you just give it to them.
He's the chair of the Kennedy Center.
And all around good guy. But talking about a lawyer's life in business as well as the philanthropy that he's since become part of. So there's an event side to things. There's an extracurricular side to the business law program, and we have the leaders of I think almost all of the student groups, although maybe not quite all of the student groups here, who, and they're each going to say a minute or two just to sort of introduce you to the different extracurricular opportunities that there are. More on that in a few minutes. There are also some alumni activities, and the faculty has a lot going on the scholarly side. That's our research and writing, but that's perhaps of the most interest to you right now. There's all of those things. There's also the JDMBA, and so there has been, let's say, some feeling that was going on over the JDMBA, and there were some pretty tough negotiations about that. But I'm here to tell you the JDMBA is here. It has actually, it never went away because it was not going to go away for current students or even entering students next year. But it has been reestablished. The dean of the law school, Dean Grossman, and the dean of the business school have agreed on that. And it is going to be established on a much firmer footing, a much better footing, I think, and is going to give you, as law students, much greater flexibility, I think much greater opportunity, and I'm hoping this part is going to treat you fairly financially, because we were very worried about that. That has now been resolved, and so the JDMBA it is here. So that's the basics on the business law program side of things. But I know a lot of you are here for essentially course advice, and what I want to do now is turn it over to a couple of my colleagues, Professor Leff, who can talk about the tax courses, and Professor May, who can talk about antitrust, And then I will do sort of general cleanup on sort of general business law advice. We'll introduce the students to you, and then we'll have Q&A. And we're all trying to be very brief, so there's plenty of time for Q&A with us. And then, just to let you know the game plan, the faculty is all going to leave. And the student leaders, upperclassmen, we've organized and asked to be here, and we'll be gone, and so you can trash talk, talk candidly among yourselves about what you found valuable, what people have found valuable, what works, what doesn't, that sort of thing. So, Professor, why don't you get us started with tax?
Okay, so I actually want to do two things. I want to talk a little bit about the tax offerings, but I also just want to say a few words just generally about how to think about choosing classes as an upperclassman in law school, because I know that it can be totally overwhelming because there are a lot of classes listed and there's a lot of other things that compete for your time, a lot of valuable things that compete for your time. And so I just want to say about course choices generally. And this is especially true in the business law area, and sometimes I think it's weird to think of there even being a business law area because, you know, people pay lawyers because they perceive them as adding value to something. Like, that's how lawyers get paid. And that happens generally in a business context. That happens generally when money is changing hands. That's where lawyers add enough value to get paid a lot of the time. And so these issues pervade no matter what you're going to do as a lawyer, business issues pervade. But certainly if you're thinking of getting a job at a firm doing something that is going to be advising businesses, I think it's wise to think about there being some kind of foundational courses that you want to have on your CV or on your transcript, I'm sorry. And to think of those courses aren't necessarily a closed group. In other words, it's not that there are courses that you can identify that you certainly need, but there's a range of courses that illustrate that you are taking your classes seriously and taking seriously that you want a kind of a broad introduction. I had forgotten about this, so I jumped out of my office to run off without the list, but we have on the website.
I'll show them the website.
Okay, good. And Professor Snyder can tell you more. You know, those classes certainly include business associations, and they certainly include some other things. I argue that they include the introductory federal income tax class, but there's a bunch of classes that you should think about.
Everybody who matters agrees that it includes federal first
class. I don't know if everybody who matters is something aggressive thing to say, but
more aggressive.
So the main pitch is to think about taking your class seriously. The flip side of that, obviously, is that if you took only those classes, then you would miss a tremendous amount of opportunity to learn things that you don't learn in those classes. Things like how to represent clients, which you really don't learn those things in those foundational classes because too much time is being devoted to coverage of a substantial amount of law and to the kind of critical thinking process that is at the heart of what lawyers are always doing. And so you have to balance those things against each other and make good choices. You don't want to have everything be these kind of 4-credit big classes because then you're going to miss out on a lot, and you don't want nothing to be these 3 or 4-credit big classes because then you're going to miss out on a lot. Maybe that's too vague to be helpful, but that's my general plea.
Go for a lot.
Go. You can't have everything. There are other very important things that you're doing with your time all the time. Okay, so specifically about tax, let me just tell you how I envision our tax offerings. We actually have a lot of offerings in tax, all of which are fabulous classes. I really think that everybody, no matter what they're doing, they should take the introductory federal income tax class. We teach that 3 times every single semester, so there are 6 sections per year of federal income tax class, so you shouldn't have trouble with scheduling with that. That is really gives you an introduction to kind of what is going on in tax. What does it mean to have an income tax, and what are the various aspects of it? There's some policy parts of it. There's some coverage of the law. A lot of it introduces you to the basic business concepts that are necessary to understanding tax. After that, I kind of think there's no necessary route after that in tax classes. A lot of people take the corporate tax class, which is an important class, and I think especially if you're thinking that you might want to be a tax lawyer, it's a very important class. But I also think that we offer a class called partnership tax, and the majority of businesses in America are not taxed as corporations, they're taxed as partnerships, and there's a kind of a fundamental difference in conceptually in how those tax systems work, and that's a very important area. We offer international tax, which is also a great class. We offer estate and gift taxation. We offer comparative tax. I offer a class called nonprofit organizations, which is largely a tax class, though not entirely.
It's a huge segment of our economy.
And especially in Washington, if you're representing organizations in Washington. I partially went to law school because I was involved in nonprofit organizations, and I would sit around a table of people in first student organizations and then other nonprofit organizations and just think about, surely someone at this table should know all of the governing rules that are controlling all of us. There'd be like someone who had a rumor, like my cousin told me, that we're not allowed to do that. And then sitting around the table, all of the directors would say, like, oh, yeah, we can't do that. And I just thought, like, that can't be right. Someone should know. Oh, maybe I should be that person. And it is, you know, you will find yourself over the course of your life involved in various types of associations, whether professionally or just in your life. And it's great to know something about that law. That's just a pitch for my own personal class. I also teach a tax policy class. There's a pension class, which is another, people don't think of that. I never thought of that as existing at all when I was a law student. It is largely a subcategory of tax, and it's a really important and big area.
And next week on Wednesday from 3 to 7, there's a panel with some really high-level government people, but particularly from 4:30 to 7, we are having a careers panel with a number of practitioners in town discussing with you opportunities in the health and benefits area.
And people are hiring in that area. That's the information.
And, of course, the tax clinic and even, I don't know, even the community development clinic is in some ways a
yes,
nonprofit.
Yes, they do all the tax-exempt applications for nonprofits. We used to do it, but under the terms of our grant, we can't, so we offloaded it to Professor Bennett.
So all that is to say, there's lots and lots of offerings in tax, and if you want to talk in more detail about making choices between them, please feel free to come see me in my office. I'm there most of the time and happy to see people. If you send me an email, then I'll definitely be there.
Yeah, he's at the end of the hallway, and he gets lonely.
Yeah, I mean,
on a secret place. So, Professor May is going to talk about antitrust, and please ignore the screen and so
on. I also met the hallway and get lonely, so I'd be very happy to have people come by. I have a little handout here for anyone who thinks they might possibly be interested in antitrust. It'll give you a nice short overview of the origins of the field and the statutes and remedies and how it's developed and its core concerns. But very briefly, the Sherman Act, which is still the basic federal antitrust act, was the second major piece of economic regulation from the national government. That was passed way back in 1890, but is still very foundational if you want to know about business law in America. And it was supplemented by just two other acts passed in 1914, the Clayton and Federal Trade Commission Acts. And these acts are very important for anybody in a representing a private business person, nonprofit, because it's fairly easy to run afoul of them, and there are both private and public remedies for running afoul of them. There's injunctive relief, there's treble damages, and there's substantial criminal penalties now for both private individuals and corporations. These acts have always been pretty fundamental, and the Supreme Court a few years ago refers to the Sherman Act as nothing short of the Magna Carta of free enterprise in America. And the core idea of the antitrust laws is to preserve as much active marketplace competition as possible in general, and to protect market competition from various kinds of private restrictions that are deemed to be illegitimate. And its core concerns are with both concerted activity that collectively might increase market power, leading to higher prices for consumers, reduce output, reduce innovation, and secondly, to deal with exclusionary conduct, monopolization conduct, say by Microsoft, or years ago AT&T, that might in fact exclude competitors from the market, again leading to possibly higher prices for consumers, reduced output, reduced innovation, and the like. There are four basic areas of conduct that antitrust law focuses on. The first is agreements among head-to-head competitors in the market, right? The most blatant would be head-to-head competitors coming together and forming a cartel for no purpose whatsoever other than to extract more money from consumers and to collectively gain more profits by jacking up prices. OPEC is a classic cartel, right? That's a core focus of antitrust law, right? But other kinds of horizontal behavior could be dividing up a market. You take those customers, I'll take these customers, and we'll all get our own little private monopoly that'll allow us to do these things we're concerned about. But it also can concern other kinds of behavior that may be more mixed or actually may be good. Various kinds of joint ventures among head-to-head competitors can be a good thing. A joint research and development that gets things developed more quickly or develops things that wouldn't have been produced otherwise. So there can be a range of conduct between head-to-head competitors. A second category has to do with so-called vertical arrangements between suppliers and purchasers. Right? Supplier who says, I'll sell my goods to you only if after you buy them, you, when you resell them, keep your prices up to this level. You can't sell them for less than that. That's resale price maintenance. Or you can have a vertical arrangement where a supplier says, the only way I'm selling you this good you really want is if you also buy this second thing from me. That's a tying arrangement, okay? Or you could have an exclusive dealing arrangement, right? University A, let's call it American, will buy Coca-Cola products, but only by agreeing not to sell any Pepsi products in the building. That's exclusive dealing, okay. A third category is mergers. And all mergers in the country below, above certain specified, rather low thresholds have to be reviewed by the FTC or the Antitrust Commission. The overwhelming majority of those are approved, but some can be challenged and some as potentially anti-competitive. The last major area that antitrust focus on is monopolization. Big case against Microsoft a few years ago. But others as well, and you can have a variety of conduct that might illegitimately leave somebody overwhelmingly dominant in a market. Predatory pricing, various license restrictions, and the like. Antitrust law is a very valuable field to study, not only to know about antitrust law so that you can counsel clients, warn them about potential pitfalls, but it also is a field where you extensively learn to apply basic economic reasoning within the law, and that has value way beyond just antitrust law. And finally, it's a way to get great insight into how various industries operate and various kinds of business practice. In addition to giving the basic antitrust course, we also in some years give an advanced antitrust course and an international and comparative law course. And as I say, I've got a handout for you, and if you didn't get one and you're interested, just email me and be happy to send you one. That'll give you a greater sense of it. But that, in a nutshell, is what the panel is about.
Thanks very much. So it's my job on this piece, as I said, to sort of back clean up and give the general stuff that hasn't gotten covered, and also give you a little bit of an orientation to our offerings more broadly. So first thing to point out is it's great if you want to be a business lawyer to be in D.C. It used to be the conventional wisdom was you want to do business, New York's the best place to be. And, you know, I'm not going to say New York's not a great place to be. It's a great place to be. London's a great place to be. They got a lot of business there, too. But I am not going to admit to being second to anybody as a legal market with respect to business law here in Washington, because this was increasingly true for a while, but especially after the financial crisis, a tremendous amount of business law involves regulation of business. And law is an aspect of regulation, but there are also more particular regulatory agencies with which businesses have to interact, sometimes in a proactive way, sometimes in a controversial way. And that is here. And a big piece of that is your ability to get experience with those agencies. So, you know, part of DC offers two opportunities or two kinds of opportunities that are both terrific. One is, you know, in case you haven't noticed, there are lots of big business law firms downtown. And some of you want to and will get jobs or internships or that sort of thing working for those kinds of firms. Some of you will have experiences sort of like that, although representing different kinds of clients. But, you know, Professor Abramowitz used to be a partner at Arnold & Porter, one of those big firms, and I'm sure she treats you much the way she treated her associates when she was there. So you have that those sorts of opportunities. Both on the for-profit side, if you go and you get a paying job or internship, or on the externship side, that's where you're getting credit. And there, of course, we have a number of rules, and you know we can't be doing it for paying clients. I think that has something to do with exempt organizations. I'm desperate. No, all right.
13th Amendment.
The 13th Amendment? Oh, okay. Well, that's getting way above my head. But anyway, we nevertheless have rules about that. But in Washington, we have a huge number of nonprofits and government employers and providers of externships, because we have all the government agencies, and those are all fine, and we have lots of great externship opportunities there. And dare I say, amazing thing, speaking of exempt organizations, is we have all kinds of nonprofits that are lobbying associations for industries that, let me just say, are very much for profit. But you can go work for those associations like Financial Services Roundtable, which represents the biggest banks in the world, and you can do that as part of an externship program here. So Washington offers tremendous opportunities in those respects. So it's great to be in Washington as a business lawyer, whether you're on the private side, the public side, the government side, or whatever. But let me also talk to you about more traditional course planning. So I'm a little biased, but I think the easiest way to deal with this is not necessarily, you're going to have to use the course schedule, and maybe you try to use the course catalog, but I am unable to use the course catalog. It doesn't work for me. So what we've done in the business law program is we put together essentially our own curriculum, and it is amazing. So well, you can just go to the homepage for the law school, and you can type business there, or you can just click on programs, and as I always say, the programs, that we have a lot of programs at the law school. A lot of them are really good. They're listed in order of their importance. And so if you click on the first one, the business law program, and it'll give you some various propaganda and scheduling the events that I talked about. This is the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission actually met here. This is a picture of that. But you want this big button, view the curriculum. And if you, the curriculum in law and business is enormous. I actually counted, and we have over 150 courses in and related to business law right here at this law school, which is roughly 10 times more than you can take. So it's an amazing opportunity, but it can be a bit overwhelming. So we've done essentially two things here. One is we have broken the courses into fields, taking as our guide the way law firms tend to be organized instead of the way law schools tend to be organized. So to some degree, we weren't able to do that, but largely we were. And because we've broken it up under these practice area headings, you can find stuff, and it may be that I want to try this from this area and that from the other area and so on, and you can do that. Or you may say, this is the area I'm really interested in. What's everything y'all have there? And it's there. We have a little trouble keeping it up to date. We are always getting new courses, but Mr. Griffin and I do our best to try to keep it up to date. So we're usually within about a semester of having it up there. And now these are not necessarily courses that are offered every semester, but we try not to list them if they're not offered at least every 2 years. But the idea is if they're offered every 2 years, a JD student can take them. So the organization here, I hope, will be a big help to you. The other thing is, we have put up some course planning advice. So Professor Bennett has something sort of from the clinical side of things. Professor May has something on antitrust law. And then Professor Efros and I have put up some just sort of general course advice. And so you can just click on those things. And that was Professor Efros's, and read through it. And then you can click on mine. And a lot of the stuff I would say right here, right now, I tried to write down for you in a way that you can access it easily. I tried to keep it short and extremely direct. So I hope some of you have found it and read it. I try to do a few things here. I try to explain to you what the differences in practice areas are. So a lot of people are not born knowing that there's a difference between commercial law and corporate law. And in fact, there are a lot of law students who still don't know. I try to explain that difference so you can sort of get a handle on that kind of thing. And then I know lots of people want an orientation to what do the courses do? What do the courses in different areas do? I try to give you that. And then I know everybody wants lists. What should I take? What order should I take it in? And I really ask you to read the first stuff first, because the list will make better sense to you if you do that. But I do try to not hold back. I try to give you my lists. And not everybody's lists are the same, and that's why we have different course advice from different professors up there. So my own list in terms of courses everybody should take, and I don't just mean business law folks, I mean everybody should take business associations. Everybody should take federal personal income tax. And by the way, for those of you who haven't taken it, I know you're all thinking, oh, tax is supposed to be good, and I know we have good professors, but it's just not for me. OK,
Okay, 80% of you are thinking that right now. I'm going to tell you two things. First of all, you're going to like tax. I realize that that seems an incredible statement to many of you, but you are going to like tax. And Professor Left is going to bristle at this a little bit, maybe. But I actually think of tax is, to a large degree, a course in social policy. Yes, it's about reading the statute. Yes, it's about learning the rules. And there might even be some math involved. He's going to deny it here. But we do a tremendous amount of regulation through the tax code. And if you don't get tax, you're not going to get law. So you need that. And then I think, and this, maybe I'm biased here because I teach secure transactions, although not next year, but I generally teach secure transactions. And I think everybody should have that class or a similar class. And that's because we live in a credit economy. And we don't offer a course that's the law of loans. And so you need a course that is going to teach you how the law deals with credit. Secured transactions, to my mind, is probably the main course. And the thing I need to make sure gets out there, and I'm not sure how best to publicize this, we ordinarily offer that every single semester because we want everybody to take it. Next year, it's only going to be offered in the fall. And Professor Hughes is going to teach it. She teaches it pretty much every fall. I generally teach it in the spring, but not next year. So if you want to take secured transactions for the 2Ls out there, so next year is your last year, you got to do it in the fall. The following year, I expect that we'll offer it every semester like usual. It's just a scheduling thing. So I'm going on sabbatical in the spring. That's the real answer. Those are the three courses I think everybody should take. I give you more, a longer list of things, you know, you probably should take. Talk about corporate finance, the other stuff. But I'm going to keep moving here. I need to switch hats now and put on my international hat. And because often we have somebody here who talks about international business, and that's what I'm that person today. So I do the international side of things as well as the U.S. side of things. And so for those of you who are interested in international law, we have tremendous offerings. They're all up there. There are, I guess, a couple of key things I would say is, one is international business has two aspects, really, a public aspect, public law aspect, and that, of course, is like international trade, and that governs things that many people who don't have exposure to this area don't know about, but it's things like anti-dumping duties, countervailing duties, free trade agreements, all that sort of stuff. Big area of practice, so you want to take a course on the public side, but you also want to take at least one or more courses on the public side. And I also should say we are really strong in trade, and we have an amazing network in trade. We have people working right now from here, current students and alumni at the USTR, the United States Trade Representative's Office. Great opportunities there. But we also are extremely strong internationally on the more purely business and commercial side. The survey course there is IBT, International Business Transactions. That covers a little bit of lots of different kinds of transactions. And then I offer a course, and again, it's just going to be in the fall next year, called International Sales, that will give you a sort of fuller bore on one kind of transaction on the private law side. It's sort of contracts in the international arena, mainly about sales of goods. And so, again, I'm biased, but, you know, I hope a lot of y'all will take that course. Nancy.
I was going to say also, if I'm not preempting you, some of the summer programs abroad also include as one half of the component some form of international business transactions, specifically the London, Paris, Geneva program.
And Geneva is all about trade.
Well, it depends on what piece of Geneva. There's
the intellectual property act, and there's the WTO.
Okay, so I think that's the general orientation.
And I know some of y'all have 1 o'clock classes, so I understand if you have to go. But what I want to do now is introduce the student leaders. So we have student leaders from at least the Business Law Review, the Transactional Law Society, maybe the JDMBA Club, I'm not sure, maybe the Social Enterprise Law Society, Business Law Society, and somebody, our team scholar, to talk about externships and that sort of thing. So just brief introductions there, then we'll go to Q&A.
My name is Sean Griffin, the Dean's Fellow for the Business Law Program. We have Eric Weisstein from the Transactional Law Society, Danny Fullerton from the Business Law Review, Liz Baseman from the Business Law Society, and Karina Seagardi in the back from the Civil Enterprise Society. So I'll be really brief with what I'm going to talk about. My position generally supports the Business Law Program through events and the groups and such. One of the things that I wanted to highlight today was that I think that most people attend the externship fair that happens right at the beginning of this semester. What we're working on doing is having a more limited fair next year that will take place early in the fall, and that will be focused more on business opportunities, and then the student base will also be tighter, so the registration will only go out to those student groups that are interested in that. So that's one thing to look out for. Starting in the beginning of next fall is a career or an externship or internship fair more limited to business opportunities. Right now, I'll turn it over to Eric Leistein from the Transactional Law Society.
Eric Leistein, I represent the Transactional Law Society. Transactional law is very different from the litigious side of law that you would see after something has gone wrong. Transactional law is a little bit more about getting the contracts right, getting terms right for everybody in advance so that there isn't some kind of a conflict later. So this club focuses on training people for that kind of negotiation. There are several competitions that we have currently offered. We do a qualifying competition in the fall, and if you were to advance through that, then we have a transactional law competition that takes place at the regional level and then at the national level. So passing the qualifying tournament gets to the regional round rather well.
What does that mean? Sorry. Like, what would you do in a competition like that?
So for us this past year, it meant that we had to take a purchase by one business entity of another business entity and smooth out some wrinkles that had occurred in the interim between when the original contract was signed and before closing. So we met maybe 6 times over the course of a month and a half and met with clients and interviewed. Finally, we prepared a contract draft and submitted it, and then we actually met with the other teams and negotiated over that in 3 different rounds. So that was one competition. There are other competitions, and I think as your sort of overall curriculum notes, there's opportunities in sports law, environmental law, really anywhere a business happens, there's going to be a contract element somehow involved, and that's where we get involved. And there's competitions that we're looking into for this upcoming year in all of those different areas. So please don't hesitate to participate in the qualifying round. And we also, we can talk about this later, but we have our own curriculum recommended for people who are focused on transactional side of business law. So I'll present that maybe when. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Danny Fullerton. I'm the incoming executive editor of the Business Law Review here. And just so you know, we are, for now, the only law review in Washington, D.C., focusing solely on business issues. So that does give WCL a unique position in the business community. We publish on a very wide range of business law topics, whether it's copyright in the fashion industry, to nuclear regulation, to international trade, to the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, you name it, it touches business, we'll publish it. But for those of you that won't be involved in the law review next year, I know you guys are all nervous to find out on Friday. We do host for a symposium every year. We just held ours last week on transactional lawyering, and the one previous year was on benefit corporations, L3Cs. And So that's a great opportunity to come out, interact with the rest of the business law community of the school. Also, you can be involved, pick up our book. They're around the school. We have another one coming out about a month. Again, wide range of business issues. Also, you can check out our website, auvlr.org, where we have very frequently updated case briefs on new developments in business law, as well as some just descriptions of new laws, like the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, new developments. And you can stay connected with us, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. Can sign up on our website for our mailing lists. We'll send out updates about business law coming up.
Hey, I'm president of the Business Law Society. My name is Liz. We are the more general organization. Every semester we try to host a career panel and then some sort of fun activity and then an alumni dinner. So last semester, I don't know if anybody came, we had the white collar crime career panel. This semester we had someone, we joined the Sports and Entertainment Law Society to have Karen Lito from NASCAR, and we also worked with the civil and bankruptcy event. On a more personal note, I am a finance undergrad major, and I've taken many of the classes that Professor Snyder has talked about today. So if you have any questions about your own course taking, I also work for a government agency right now and am involved in nonprofits. So if you have any general questions about business law, happy to help.
Thanks. Karina.
Hi, I'm Karina. I'm here to represent the Social Enterprises Legal Society. I'm here to infiltrate the business law program with the public interest, but I also do the same vice versa. Basically, social enterprise is a new thing that is rising here, not just in DC, but just throughout the nation, where basically it's enterprises that serve a specific public benefit. This is something that's taught in various courses, one of which is actually at the nonprofit law that's not the professor left. And it's also something that the Community Economic Development Law Clinic, which I belong to, we also serve social enterprises as well as our clients. And so a huge part of what we do, we collaborate with the social enterprise master's students in the main campus. They're also a new program, so they have great ideas that they would like to implement here in DC. And so we tried as much as possible to collaborate with them to come up with new projects. And you can come and talk to me if you're interested in joining our group.
And can I just jump onto that? Just this week, the faculty approved a new course for the spring in social enterprise law that's going to be taught by Jonathan Ng at, from Ashoka and another person who's, I'm blanking on her name right now, Chloe.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's perfect. So, yeah, there you go.
Okay, I don't generally need to say this to this group, but those interested in public interest, a lot of people think that public interest is all about, say, litigating impact cases against dictators, and that's great. But a lot of people think if you want to change the world, one of the best ways you could change the world is by helping finance that dam in whatever country that's going to put a lot of people to work who really help the economy and so on, or do whatever else. So there is lots of public interest opportunity in business law, both of the sort of new hip variety and of also the old-fashioned variety. So tremendous amount going on. That's the end of the faculty presentation and student presentation part. So we'll take your questions that you've got for faculty, and then we're going to leave, and we're going to leave y'all to talk amongst yourselves. So questions? Yes.
Real quick, you mentioned the reinstated the MBA program, JDMBA. Do you know where we can find more information / when that closes up, or if you can still apply for it?
Well, I think so. This is officially not my department. So I don't. The bottom line answer is I don't know. But I talked to the dean yesterday, and he said I could announce all of this publicly. And I think he and the dean of the business school made it official like on Tuesday. So I think we're gonna have to wait a little while. I assume they're gonna put it on the web. And it should all be going up. But yes, you should be able to apply. And what The dean was really fighting for law students' interests here. You know, one of the issues was timing, like when you did the business piece, and he wanted you to have a choice on that, and we're gonna, you're gonna have that. But so all that has to be, I guess I should say, I'm not making any official announcements here. You should not rely on this, but the stuff should be coming out on the web. It might take a week or two. I'm not sure how.
But we should still eventually, but it's not closed as an option, essentially, is what I'm
It asking. Is not closed. It was never closed for anybody who is here or even the next entering class. So you, it was always there for you. It was not abolished for people who were here. And the abolition turned out to be very temporary. So, you know, it will affect nobody except that it will give you much greater options than the students had even last year.
Yeah. Is there an opportunity to take classes, MBA classes, without having the MBA, the JD MBA? And if there is that recommended, or is it kind of, do you think that it's fine just to do law
school?
Do you see what
okay.
I'm saying?
So, yeah, I do. First of all, there's a general rule, and I don't know it, but I think you're allowed to take up to two classes in the university, essentially, that's included in your law school tuition. And you could do business classes. Some people take language classes. You could take Shakespeare class. I assume they have Shakespeare down there. So I think there's that. And how that works, I'm not sure. You need to check the rules. But there is that opportunity, I think. I would need to check the rules. In terms of whether to do it, when I ask practicing lawyers, and I'll say business lawyers. One of the first things I say in my general introduction is there's no such thing as business law. Lawyers don't refer to business law. But anyway, if you ask a business lawyer, when I ask sort of senior partner types or regulators, you know, what would you say students need to have that you're seeing they don't have? The first thing is make sure they know accounting. Okay? So if you haven't picked up accounting, you really need to. Now, you can do that here. You can take accounting here at the law school. We offer an accounting for lawyers class, which is really good because you don't want to be an accountant, right? You came here because you want to be a lawyer, and lawyers don't need what accountants need. It's sort of different, so you can take the course here. But there's nothing wrong with taking a general accounting class. That'll also give you what you need. It's designed a little bit differently. It may not work quite as well. And you may do that here, and you may do it officially for a grade. You might audit it or whatever. But the thing to realize is my dad had this whole speech he gave me. Accounting is the language of business. And it really is. If you can't read a financial statement, this is true, you know, for litigators, every bit as much as everybody else, you're not going to be able to understand what's going on. So accounting would be a key one. I do not believe you need to take huge amounts of business law classes to be a business lawyer. I did it. I think people would say I was business lawyer, loosely speaking. I did not major in finance. That was not offered at my college. I majored in medieval history. And the economy was different then. And my dad made me take accounting, and that was it. But of course, I picked up a lot of business knowledge in my courses here.
I guess not. Ms. Lowy.
So I'm wondering about the summer sometimes. I'm wondering about tax class in general, but sometimes in the summer there's been some business types of courses like tax offered. And we're not seeing that this summer. Is there a plan for that or not this summer?
We have occasionally, but I know it's not this summer, and I don't think it's been for the past couple of summers.
Oh, I think there might have been one last summer. So
yeah,
We sometimes offer tax and BA, which I like to see us do. But we are short on space, and we've gone with all these institutes, and so it's
I think it's not, as far as I know, it's not happening this summer.
But that being said, well, I guess too late for this. I was going to say, that being said, I mean, one of the things that is amazing about Professor Schneider and the business law and this school really is that we can be very responsive to course
demand,
needs.
Yeah.
If we recognize that there is student desire for something to happen in a certain way, with enough lead up, we can make it happen in that way because we're committed to getting the courses at a times when they are convenient to be made, and it's not that hard.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know specifically, but it can happen.
That's very true.
You're not the only one who's asked that. I've heard that question. So
about summer.
This summer in particular.
About tax or BA?
Yeah, about tax. Was tax your risk or better BA?
Yeah, tax.
So.
Well, send me an email. Professor Left is right. If there's demand, we try to offer it. And we also try to, when I hear from alumni that we need a course, we try to get it. So there are very few courses, I think, that you could name that one might want that's not on that list. But if we're having a scheduling problem, we can try. It may be too late for this summer, though.
How about for the spring, then? Are there definitely going to be tax, federal personal income tax?
Yes. Yeah, federal personal income tax we offer 3 times every semester.
And do you teach
it? Which
is
really too much. But
do you teach it in the spring also?
I'm teaching it in the spring, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
But there are lots of, I mean, we have a variety of professors, all of whom are really good in federal personal income tax.
I was wondering, is there a significant redundancy in taking your international sales class and Professor Hughes's sales class?
No.
Okay.
The sales class is basically UCC Article 2, and so it's, in a sense, to some degree, advanced contracts, but focusing just on Article 2. Some people who had trouble with contracts also like to take it because it sort of reinforces a lot of stuff, but it's UCC Article 2. International sales, the center of that is an international treaty, the CISG, that governs sales. And we do cover some Article 2, but we don't cover significantly more Article 2 than we do French law, German law, and to some degree English law. So we try to look at the likely legal systems. And so Article 2 is part of it, but that's just a small part.
Go ahead. Okay, we're doing a semester exchange program, and there's courses like international commercial law and private law. Is that something that we should try and take here because it would be from more of a American financial focus, or is it,
where's the exchange like?
It's in Oslo.
That's really expensive. Oslo is a really expensive city. I don't have a view on that.
Okay.
You know, I feel like you can take international law as well anywhere. I think a lot of international lawyers, a conventional piece of advice is, first and foremost, be very good in your own system. And then do international too, but you got to be good in your system. So if you're going to essentially be an American lawyer who does international law, I might focus more on the American courses here, but that's just, I don't have a strong view on it. I don't know if anybody else does.
I'm a little more neutral. There is no international law per se governing commercial transactions. It's by treaty, it's voluntary, it's either bilateral, multilateral, or it's by contract where people are designating the law to apply. And I think, I'm guessing because Oslo is a pretty sophisticated place, that you would get a pretty good basis there.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Balamed. I recently finished my JD MBA last year in Portland, Oregon, and I moved out here so I'm starting the LLM program here. But I was curious about what is the best way to get practical experience in the business law field? Which clinic? I know you talked about a tax clinic, and but starting out possibly in the summer and the fall, what are the best courses?
If I can take that question, our clinic has never really taken LLMs. But I actually, for the first time this year, have someone from law and government who's looking for practical experience and has applied to work this summer in the clinic with me on summer inventory. So I think there's a flexibility to work with the LLMs and to figure out a way to complement your studies with some practical experience, even if the opportunities are not out there in, you know, regular sort of offerings. So whatever you're interested in, go see the person who can be of help.
Well, and I'd find out about whether you can do externships. I don't know the answer to that.
Yes, I think that...
But I would look into that.
But I think that is it the law and government? The law and government program, yeah. I mean, I think that they arrange their own externships. So if you went and talked to Amy Tenney, which is really good.
Okay, I'm going to turn it over to the students. We actually, I'm sorry y'all don't have more time, but I think you'll have enough. So.
No, there's no prerequisites. No, I mean, there's some, like some classes where, you know, the room is split in how quickly it's possible to grasp if we are dealing with tax issues, but it's not a prerequisite at all. And she's like, you really don't have to.
Thank you.
All right,
great. I'm going to start it out.
Okay, so this is something that we're running through the externship office, and I just met with the director 2 days ago, so this is still something very much in the planning stages. But we're going to send out registration for that externship through, and it's going to be limited to people who are in student groups or have taken higher level business classes. So there has to be, what?
Am I on your list?
I don't know that particular thing, but we're going to be sending it out to people who have a demonstrated interest in business law that is sort of limited to that, so that people who's like firms and government offices and all the employers who come know that the people who they're talking to have an interest in what they're actually doing, so it matches better students to positions, because the externship fair in general can kind of be a little overwhelming. So that's the idea. But we'll send out registration through student groups and classes.
Okay, because I'd love to be part of it, even though I'm not on BLX.
So. Okay. And I wanted to echo Sean's promotion of that, because all of the organizations have been working together, the business law program. Like, Ava Sanders reached out to us. We're going to be pulling in the Law Reviews Alumni Network. They're going to be setting up their own booth, potentially. So there will be a lot involved.
Great.
Okay. Yeah. When you guys were 2Ls, you know, coming out from 1L year, what classes did you guys take? BA?
I took federal income tax with Les. He's a really great professor. The test is, yeah, he's the test is manageable. The reading is pretty short, and he's really engaging. I all of the tax professors I hear good things about. I've only had to grad him, so I can recommend him. But he's good.
Yeah, I took international trade first intro with Eli. Really good class. It's very WTO heavy. So there are other trade courses if you want to stay away from WTO. There's U.S. trade remedies, which is more U.S. domestic handling of trade disputes. But I'm in federal personal income tax now, as well as international business transactions. I have an hour for tax. She is awesome, but she's an adjunct at Temple. She's actually here more than she is at Temple, so I know how it works. And as far as IBT goes, there's a huge difference in professors. So I have mine taught by two adjuncts in the department, and one of them, they just trade weeks, and one of them she's actually taught. She just brings in her time somewhere, and they get So if you're a person that is going to teach the course yourself anyway, you know, like class reading, you don't get a lot out of it, you're just going to study at the end, you can take that. But Anderson also offers it, and this, from what I hear, is much better at teaching.
Would you recommend taking this association before intro to income tax?
I'm taking business associations now, and I took federal income tax first. I don't see an issue with that now. It's not an issue. And then, yeah.
Do you have any professor recommendations for business associations? There's a lot of questions.
Yeah, so I have Greenberg. It really depends on what you're looking for. I know that Siegel, it's kind of one of the things where people love her or don't like her so much. She has had in the past the moniker Bloody Mary because apparently her test is very hard. But she's also a really great professor and incredibly connected to the field. So it's more intense than other classes, but it's also a better experience, I think, if you want to handle something like that. I have Greenberg. He's an adjunct. I don't know if he's teaching next year. I assume so. He's taught for the last few years. He's pretty mellow, really nice guy, and the class reading is pretty like, basic. So from what I hear at process station, it's out there with Siegel's and yes. Yeah.
No, I'm just going to disagree. I had it Frost. So it's a lot of work, but it's a really important class. Like I use BIA, I use the International Business Transaction, Applied and Trade, Applied in another class, and he's not the Harvard grader. So
I think the confusing thing about FROS is how he organizes the syllabus. So it's almost like a statute that kind of cross-references slides. But if you can get the hang of it, then it's you can understand how he lays it out. He lays it out really well.
That's the nip. Did you notice the
nip? I think they were going to move
away. Yeah, so
just curious, does the BLP have a listserv or anything that we can join to get emails about
My listserv just goes out to the heads of the different societies. If you want me to send you email, I mean, I don't see a problem with adding individual students, though it's probably easier for those things to be targeted through the student groups if you are part of one of the student groups. I put the business law program email that is mine on the board. It's blpinfo@american.edu. You can send me an email about anything.
Outside of property, has anyone taken any of the real estate classes? I feel like I haven't heard anyone ever take a real estate class here. No?
No, I haven't taken any of
them. Is there anyone that I could talk to or they could point me or guide me to somebody who's maybe specialized in that area?
I can tell you that IRF is considered pretty strong for most real estate and land transactions, but I found his class to be harrowing, so take it with a grain of salt. But he is, I think, considered the local authority on land transfer. In fact, most of the classes that you see associated with that will have him in some capacity involved.
Burke?
Yes. Harlow Burke.
Any other questions?